This is the sound of a gas-powered snowmobile. It's loud, it smells, and this technology is contributing to the growing threat of climate change. But there is one student in the Roaring Fork Valley who is stepping up to do something about it. I'm Hallie Zander, and you're listening to the Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program, where we highlight projects and issues relevant to youth on the western slope of Colorado.
So, my dad and I are working together to take an old gas-powered snowmobile and make it electric.
This is Connor Hoffman, a sophomore at Basalt High School. With some help from Aspen Ski Company and Holy Cross Energy, he and his dad are changing the status quo for ski mountain travel.
So how did you get the idea to start this project?
Well, I've always wanted to convert something. The general term for these things is an EV conversion. And they're most commonly done with cars and stuff. But nobody's really done a snowmobile before. And it's kind of a smaller scale project. While a car is a bigger thing, a snowmobile is something that two people can manage a little bit better and you can keep in a shop rather than having a whole parking space or garage for it or stuff. And I was talking to my dad about doing a car conversion because I was super into that. And he mentioned a snowmobile conversion. And then this winter, because of everything that's happened, we've had some spare time for sure. And we wanted to build an electric snowmobile for the ski company because the ski company thought it'd be pretty cool. And when we approached the ski company, they were super into it.
Now, while Connor seems extremely informed and has the help of his dad, Greg Hoffman, who is a master electrician, I was still curious why SkiCo wouldn't just buy an electric snowmobile themselves.
It's not necessarily a new technology. I guess it's maybe a new application for technology, but there is no commercially available electric snowmobile on the market. However, there is a company called Taiga Motors out of Canada that is working to bring an electric snowmobile to production.
I also spoke with Auden Schendler, the VP of Sustainability at SkiCo, about this electrification project. He was similarly disappointed with the lack of options available on the market today.
So snowmobiles are a tricky thing. I mean, if you've ever been on the hill, you know they smell bad. They're what's called a two-stroke engine, and you can make those cleaner, but they're still pretty dirty. They use gasoline. Over the years, there have been four-cylinder snowmobiles that are basically Honda engines, but they never worked that well for us. So the next step would be electrification. Snowmobiles are kind of a good platform for that because it's just you could have a sled that carries a battery, and that's what a snowmobile is. There was a company in Canada, that's trying to make production sleds, but we could never get them from them. And we basically gave up and said, let's build our own.
Climate change has been an important issue for SkiCo, and Auden is leading a multi-pronged approach in their fight for climate justice.
So we have two general approaches. One is, how do you wield as much power as is possible, given who you are? And then how do you use your basically wealth and influence to model for the rest of the world?
When Biden was sworn into office, he signed a number of executive orders, one of which suspended new oil and gas leases on federal lands in Wyoming. The Western Energy Alliance, which is made up of a group of oil and gas drilling companies, has sued Biden over this suspension. Auden claims that Aspen SkiCo will be using its political power and influence to support the president during this lawsuit.
We're coming in support of Biden. So a business with huge amount of employees and a lot of customers in the state and nationally coming in support of the president on climate, that there's some power there.
Auden hopes that by supporting this electric snowmobile project, SkiCo can model sustainable initiatives as a standard for other powerful companies. And he has picked the right people for the job. From Greg's electrical skills to Connor's natural talent and intellectual curiosity, this father-son pair is prepared to conquer the challenge.
So my dad is an electrician, and he's the head of lift maintenance and snowmobile repairs at Snowmass. So he has a lot of experience with snowmobiles and stuff, and he's super into riding snowmobiles. Each member of our family has a snowmobile and stuff. So he's really into that sort of thing. Our progress report in the project right now is we have pretty much everything installed. So we have the motor installed. We have the controller for the motor installed. We have what's called the BMS mounted, which is the battery management system. It's kind of the thing that makes sure that the batteries don't get messed up in any way, or we over discharge them or anything like that. We have that mounted. None of it is permanently in place yet. We have the motor coupled to the drive shaft. So if we were to add power to the motor, we could get it to actually move. I need to finish up the battery modules. We have, four? So we're doing four battery modules in the toolbox, which goes under the seat, and then a battery module of a different form factor that goes in the gas tank. So we're going to keep the old gas tank there, try to keep it the same look as the original snowmobile, but just electric. So we still have to finish up the battery modules and then wire everything up and then get everything permanently mounted and starting to work together to make it work.
And you can hear as Connor talks about the project, he is not just an assistant helping out where he can. Despite how experienced and informed Connor sounded, I was shocked to find out that he had never done anything like this before.
Have you worked on electrical projects like this in the past?
Nothing on this scale. I mean, ski lifts are electric. So my dad has experience with working with electric motors and stuff like that, but nothing on the scale of making our own battery packs and putting them together, controlling a small enough motor that it can run the snowmobile. So no, I've had experience in other projects, but nothing on the electric vehicle scale.
Connor has some practical hopes for how the snowmobile can be used, but Auden is thinking on a much bigger scale.
When you get to this final product at the end of your project, what are you planning to do with it?
So hopefully we'll be able to get it to the ski company, and then the ski company can use it around the mountains and stuff. So we don't know if it's going to be in a fixed spot or anything like that, but hopefully they'll be able to use it for regular activities and not just as a public relations thing, but actually use it for moving people around and moving things around, stuff like that.
You know, the sled itself doesn't matter, but the story of it will get people thinking, and this is going to spread through the industry. It's just the very early stages.
But if Connor, Greg, and Auden all hope to make the snowmobile functional across the mountain, they need to make sure it's powerful enough to get the job done.
Well, with your current plans, is this electric snowmobile going to be as powerful as a gas-powered snowmobile, or are there any limitations with this model?
The one thing that people consider a limitation with most electric vehicles nowadays is the range. And on electric cars, the so-called range anxiety is definitely disappearing as Tesla and Lucid and all these electric car companies come out with these very high range electric vehicles. With a snowmobile, it is a bit more challenging for sure. And because we're doing a conversion, we can't make a super custom battery pack that takes up every single inch of room on the snowmobile and stuff. So I think one of the potentially larger limitations could be the range. We're not exactly sure how much range it's going to have. When it comes to power and stuff, we don't expect it to be limited. We've done some calculations, and a snowmobile typically at sea level, just the engine has about 120 horsepower, which sounds like a lot compared to our 60 horsepower motor. However, when you bring it up to our elevation, it loses around 30% of its horsepower, which brings it down to 70 or 80 horsepower. And then to actually bring the power from the engine to the track, you lose about 20% of your power there. So everything equals out to about the same power and stuff. So I think the only potential limitation would be the range.
Now, I interview a lot of students on this show, and there are a lot of kids who impress me with their responses to my questions. but rarely does a student completely shock me. As I listened to Connor talking about electrical cells and horsepower, I scrambled to come up with some new questions that could challenge him.
You seem extremely qualified to be talking about this. I appreciate it. And now I'm like going back to my questions and kind of upping the sophistication of what I'm asking you. But
for sure.
What role do you feel like technological innovations are going to play in our fight against the climate crisis?
I think they're the only tool that we have to fight it. I guess that would be, you have technology, and that's going to be the actual stuff on the front lines that's changing all this climate stuff. And there's definitely regulations and policies and stuff that need to take place. But it's these car companies now that are really taking the initiative on the electric thing. Like before, there's a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car, and GM produced a car called the EV1, and they leased it out to people, and people loved it. People were super into it. Even though it only had 80 miles of range, it was one of the best electric vehicles that you could get back in the 1990s. But then they took them all in and they destroyed them. And from there, there was a big gap where nothing was happening, and people just thought electric vehicles were irrelevant. And then Tesla comes around and comes out with a Roadster, which was delayed and stuff, and then comes out with the Model S, and that just completely broke the market. And now with all of that legroom that Tesla has that other companies don't have, the one company that I'm thinking of is GM. Like GM is committed to basically turning all vehicles in their fleet electric by 2040 or something like that, 2030, 2040. And that one would not have happened without Tesla, and two is led by all the technological advances that Tesla and other companies have come up with to get that range so that people don't have to worry about range anxiety, the high charging rates so that you don't necessarily have to sit at a charger for hours to get a full charge. All of that is because of that technology. Nothing would happen without that technology.
And while Connor has put a lot of faith into the power of technology to save the human species from climate change, Auden believes that we must go one step further. We can't just build the technology, we also have to integrate it nationwide.
The unique challenge of climate change is that there's a time clock on it. We have to basically implement and solve the problem in a decade. And the good news is we have all the technology we need. By the way, we also have all the policy tools we need to solve the problem in the next decade. It's about deployment. So technology plays a huge and important role, but it's already there. We don't need to invent new stuff to solve this. We have to deploy what we've got.
Ever since my family bought an electric car themselves, I wondered how much good it was really doing. If we charge it overnight and the grid is still mostly powered by burning coal, are electric vehicles really doing much for the environment at all? Or is it all just a smokescreen? I don't have to see the exhaust, so therefore it doesn't exist? I wondered what was missing from this equation. Luckily, Connor and Auden had some answers.
I actually did a project on this for school. And according to my research, which was not like my personal research, but the research of others that I was bringing together, electric vehicles, even though they're powered by coal, are still quite a bit cleaner than gas-powered vehicles. One of the bigger things, which is definitely something that is going to change as it progresses, but isn't going to change as rapidly as the grid, is the manufacturing. Manufacturing has a lot larger impact on the environment when coming with an electric vehicle than a gas-powered vehicle, because you have to get all the raw materials, all the lithium, all the graphite, all of that stuff to produce the batteries, all the copper to wind the motor and stuff. You have to get all of that, and then you have to put it together in that way. But the lifetime of the car just basically cancels all of that out, even with coal. They've considered like dirty, very dirty coal in the calculations that I was looking at. And even then, electric vehicles are still cleaner than gas-powered vehicles. So that's one side of that matter. And based on that, yes, electric vehicles are very, very important. in the future, because coal plants are just going down in popularity. And it's the grid's only getting cleaner in a way. I think a big part of making the grid even cleaner is the consideration of the microgrid, where each and every house is basically its own power station, and it's providing power to the grid, where we don't have to rely on big centralized sources of energy. We can rely on our own energy, which can be cleaner based off solar and stuff, and is good for electric vehicles, because then you can power them based off of the stuff that you generate rather than someone else's generation.
Yeah, electrification is a key climate solution. Even if your car, your electric car, was charged from an entirely coal-based grid, it's still lower carbon than an internal combustion engine, just because internal combustion engines are very inefficient. It's a key solution. And the other interesting thing and optimistic thing that's happened in climate over the last decade is we used to think the hardest thing we're going to do is get the grid green. Well, in California, it's already 60% clean. In Colorado, where we are, we're headed toward 100%. And that's because of the plunging price of solar and wind, better integration of loads on the grid. So in a way, that's happening. And once you have a clean grid, or you know you're going to, then the more you electrify, the more you're using clean energy and eliminating carbon.
So if the grid is getting greener and electrifying our society is a big part of answering the challenge of climate change, are those simple facts enough to convince our manufacturing industries to make the transition?
Do you think that natural market incentives are going to be enough to support the growth of electric vehicles? Or are we going to need more government intervention and regulation?
So we bought an electric vehicle back in, I think it was 2017. And we purchased the Chevrolet Bolt EV. And this was at the time when there was the $7,500 government tax incentive and the Colorado $5,000 tax incentive for electric vehicles. And I don't think any car company at that point had hit the limit, because after a car company sells a certain number of vehicles, that incentive goes away. That was definitely helpful. Like the Bolt back then was $40,000 or something for a base model, which is quite a bit of money for a car that you might not get as much range for as a gas car. You might not be able to do as much with it. But with all the tax incentives and stuff, it made sense. There was definitely no issue in us buying it. We have solar on our house as well, so we don't necessarily have to pay as much for electricity in order to power the car and stuff. So yes, I feel like incentives are a big part that will definitely help the transition. When it comes to policies and government regulations and stuff, I feel like that's a big part of it, but that's not going to happen without the consumer deciding it first. So I feel like car companies and stuff need to market electric vehicles more and solar power and stuff more in general, so that the consumer decides and then the government follows suit to follow through with what the consumer wants.
As I said before, Connor is a sophomore in high school. With all of this passion, he has big plans for his future.
And are you interested in being an engineer in the future? Do you have a track, a dream job that involves this type of work?
Yes, I think I want to be some sort of engineer in the future. I'm not certain, but I believe I want to be some sort of engineer. And the only thing that I know is certain, that is I've wanted to go to Stanford since I was 5. So that's pretty much the only thing I know. I really want to go to Stanford. And whatever comes after that, I'm excited to.
Do they have a good engineering program?
Yes.
Yes.
One of the best, for sure.
Is there anything else that you want to add just about your process in making this incredible snowmobile or your collaboration with Ski Co?
Well, first off, I'd like to thank the Ski Company for sponsoring this project. They've been immensely helpful, and they've been just as excited about it as we have, I think. which is very excited. So it's been super cool to share it with them and to be able to kind of work with them in a way so that we can get the approval for this project and that they can have input and stuff as well. So I'm very, very grateful to the ski company Core and Holy Cross Energy for their contributions to this project. As for the project as a whole, I guess it's been a really neat experience to work on this project. For instance, there's three different kinds of batteries. The two that we were considering were the prismatic and cylindrical, and the prismatic is the more common when it comes to conversions and stuff because it's cheaper. But like many things that are cheaper, it's not as good. It doesn't have the same energy density and it's quite a bit heavier. So we decided to go with, they're called 18650 cells. They're just a little bit bigger than a AA battery. And they come in electric vehicles like the Tesla. And they're also in laptop batteries and drill batteries and all these different batteries. And when you bring them all together, you can make a very good battery pack. So instead of going with the heavier prismatic cells, we decided to go with the cylindrical cells. So we're putting 1400 cylindrical cells together in order to make the battery pack size that we need. So that was something that I never expected. I expected it to be a little bit more straightforward than having to spot weld all of these cells together, or organize them in whatever shape we wanted. But I think it's been immensely beneficial to my understanding of electric vehicles and conversions and stuff in general. And it's been a really cool learning experience for me because that's something that I thought would be really cool to do. So I feel like in general, there's a lot of things that I've been able to do on this project that I would have never been able to do otherwise.
Now, as a young person myself, I am in awe of Connor's work. I am also an environmentalist, but I'm not an electrician or an engineer. I'm inspired by this project, but it's not something that I have the tools or skills to do myself. And something I hear a lot from students nowadays is this desire to know how they can contribute. That looming question of, what can I really do to help save the planet?
Imagine what the fossil fuel industry would want you to do or not want you to do. So you know that a lot of what people talk about when they talk about solving climate change are individual actions. Drive a Prius, insulate your house, you know, ride a bike. Those things don't threaten the power structure, and they don't even come close to anything problematic for the fossil fuel industry or a government system that supports fossil fuel. So what else could you do? What does the fossil fuel industry, what does the power structure as it exists today, the status quo, what does that fear? It fears revolution. It fears movements. It fears boycotts. It fears leadership from corporations calling out fossil fuel industry or political leaders who are still subsidizing fossil fuels after 120 years. So you have to think about being disruptive. What Connor's doing is disruptive because it's a story and because it has huge potential, I think, to be a kind of a viral story. So it's in a sense part of the movement, but then others need to say, look, the kinds of things I need to do are probably going to be a little more painful than I wanted. Show up at town council in this valley in your hometown and ask them about electrification codes, about building codes, about transportation. Go to your congressman's office, make an appointment and talk to them. What are the things that through history have driven societal change? It's not what you do in your home, though that's important and noble. It's how you push on society.
No matter how old it gets to hear this, student voices are extremely powerful. And history helps us prove this point.
College youth have been the source of most revolutions in history. But younger people have also played a role in broad change in America. The civil rights movement, when MLK had kids marching in the streets, that's what got, I believe it was Johnson to say, hey, come meet with me, get the kids out of the street. So there's this intense power that youth have, and they don't recognize it. Partly because of what society has said your role is. And that can be changed, and now's the time to do it. And again, it's not being mean or violent. It's just showing up. One of the challenges has been that Americans were hand-delivered this wonderful society after World War II. And we just assumed that it ran itself. We didn't need taxes. We didn't need government. Government was bad. And now we're reaching a point where there are all these forces pushing on us that require government, whether it's COVID or climate change or injustice. Those things require government. Again, not heavy-handed government, but government of the people.
When Connor's not working on his electric snowmobile, he also spotlights as a radio DJ for the Andy Zenka Youth Empowerment Program. Make sure to tune in to our DJ sets on Sunday from 2 to 4, Monday from 2 to 4:30, and Thursdays from 7 to 9 to hear one of his upcoming sets. You've been listening to the Andy Zenka Youth Empowerment Program. I'm Hallie Zander.